I was coming from Montgomery. I had my guitar on my back. When this stranger stopped beside me in an antique Cadillac. He was dressed like 1950, half drunk and hollow-eyed. Say, it's a long walk to Nashville, would you like to ride? I sat down in the front seat, turned on the radio. Them sad old songs coming out of them speakers was solid country gold. Then I noticed the stranger was ghost white pale when I asked him for a light. I knew there was something strange about this ride. He said, "Drifter, can you make folks cry when you're playing sign? Have you paid your dues? Can you moan the blues? Can you bend them guitar strings? Boy, can you make folks feel what you feel inside? If you're big star bound, let me warn you, it's a long, hard ride."
Hello and welcome to Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. My name is Victor Sosa, joined as always by Thatcher Claus. Mr. Les Thatcher is in his outfit today, furiously trying to figure out how to put people's, lumps of coal in their Twitter stockings, as I understand it. Is that right?
Yeah, really. Well, you know, my good friend Craig Price, who promotes Mid-Atlantic NWA Legends Fan Fest, signed me up for Twitter, so you know, and I have not been on it, but yes, I've signed up for it. He thought it would be a good idea, and you know me, listen, if Jim Cornette can use a computer and a cell phone, I guess I can do most anything. And Alice is listening and saying, "Oh, I got to tell Cornette that, bless, and please do tell him I said that."
Might need to get Alice to manage your social media accounts.
There you go. Well, you know what? She's got Jimmy making big money with his podcast. Why hasn't she got us making big money with a podcast? I don't know.
It's a good question. Maybe we ought to get her to manage us or something.
I saw a notice this morning before you and I started recording that she could afford to buy her husband hair dye.
I did see that, yes.
and she's going to dye her hair, too. So, I mean, hell. We poor people can use some of that money, Alice, so,
Some of us could use some hair, by the way.
Well, I've still got a fair amount of that, and, we could dye your scalp.
Well, thanks. I appreciate it.
Start a whole new trend, right? A whole new fashion.
Right. I'll end up looking like Bam Bam Bigelow.
Well, tattoos, there you go. There you go. Anyway. More toward a serious vein, and as we start to roll this thing, I do want to send my thoughts and prayers out to my dear friend, Tommy Gilbert, who's been in the hospital now 10 days, I think, with pneumonia. I don't know if he's in the hospital in Memphis. He and Peggy live in Lexington, Tennessee, which is in the Memphis area. Tommy is a hell of a guy, amazing worker, and a dear, dear friend, long time. And so please keep Tommy in your thoughts and prayers as we go forward, and hope he's home before the Christmas holiday.
Hear, hear. Hey, tell me a little bit more about your interactions with Tommy Gilbert over the years. When was the first time you two crossed paths?
Well, in Tennessee, when I went in there to work the Nashville office. And Tommy and I wrestled a couple times, never a lot, but... a good talent and just a good guy. I guess last time I saw Tommy was Mobile. I wasn't there last year, so it would have been a year before. And Tommy fell off his roof fixing. Him and Ole Anderson both had this, and I've said to both of them, you guys can afford to hire somebody to climb up there at your age. But Tommy had fallen off his roof and hurt himself. So he doesn't get around that well anymore. But still has a great personality, and of course, he raised two kids that were pretty solid workers. Of course, Eddie, had been around more. Dougie is more, although Dougie can work just standard professional wrestling style, he got more into the slice and dice thing with, in Japan, and then with Ian Rotten's promotion and that sort of thing. But both those guys, good guys, and Tommy is just an amazing father and husband and a hell of a worker. One of the nicest compliments I think he and I both ever received, and we didn't, I don't know I, that we knew about it, but Tracy's mother said that Bob Armstrong has said Tommy Gilbert and Les Thatcher are two of the most unappreciated and underrated wrestlers I've ever seen. So, there again, that's a nice compliment, especially coming from Arms. But, yeah, Tommy's a good person, worked his butt off, had some great matches with a lot of people, and, you know, deserves to be healthy and home for Christmas.
We've received a few questions over the last couple of weeks, Les, asking for your opinion on what's going on with the Styles Clash. And I will ask you about that in just a couple of minutes.
Okay.
But first, for those of you who listen to the program and are more interested in the old school talk and the questions and what have you, I just want to give you a little heads up because I do feel, well, I am contractually obligated to at least ask Les if there's anything he'd like to say, given the fact that there was about 175 hours worth of WWE television this week between TLC and Raw and SmackDown Live on Tuesday and Main Event and Superstars and a Partridge in a Pear Tree, plus tribute to the troops. So
the 12 days.
If you have any thoughts you'd like to share about the week that was in WWE, Les, now's the chance.
Well, you know, the only, I mean, real quickly, obviously, they put their best foot forward with, you know, the tribute to the troops. You know, we can and will say a lot of negative things about the watered down product that they put out on Monday nights and so forth, so on. But you know, the tribute with the troops is well done, and it's you know, it's deserving, obviously, of those who have served our country, and so you know, that's a big plus. You and I, you know, honestly, I did not watch the complete Raw. It started out as Raw is talk. And just, you know, mostly if you listen to Dave and Brian early in the week, I'm in agreement with, virtually everything, you know, that they said. And, you know, it's just, the numbers were bad. And you know, I'm sure the yes men in the company are going to paint the picture that it was everybody's fault but theirs. You know, it was probably the talent's fault. These guys aren't over. Why aren't they over? Well, they're just not good enough, or you know, God knows what. My dear old friend Luther Lindsay, when you know, the best laid plans of mice and men, you can have what you think is the hottest angle or the hottest main event in the world, and still sometimes it doesn't draw. And Luther used to, you know, when guys sit in the dressing room and say, oh, you know, I got the house down, that's for this reason. Luther's sarcastic sense, you know, well, wow. Seal Test just announced their flavor of the month. That's why nobody's here. They've all run to their ice cream store to get Seal Test flavor of the month. Or, you know, that's page 47, column, paragraph 2 of the excuse book. The bottom line is, if you're not giving people a product that they want, they're not going to watch it. And the numbers were the worst since 2012, and it wasn't a holiday, and the football game wasn't all that amazing either. So, you know, they need to take heed. They honestly do. You know, there's some good guys there, but you know, when I watch them put, when I say little Ziggler in with all these guys and just so these guys can bounce him around like a pinball game, when the biggest thing you can do for New Day is a sweat joke, you've lost me. I don't have an answer. I do not have an answer. And like I say, you know, I pretty much would mirror what Brian and Dave have said in their review Monday night or Tuesday morning, whenever you read it. So it's, you know, to me, the product deserves a better showcase, to be showcased better, the in-ring product. And they need to try to earn a little respect from the viewing public, I think.
Well, I certainly can't argue with that. I was less than thrilled with what I saw on television and on pay-per-view this week. And the less we say about it, I think, the better. Other than to say, In the interest of being in the Christmas spirit and this being the holiday season, I want you to happily accept the gift I offered you during the pay-per-view prediction game. I generously put you over this month, Les, so please enjoy your victory.
Did I really win one?
You did. In fact, you had a very sterling 7-2 record.
Wow, the year's going out in style. All right, good. And what was your score?
I was 6-3.
Oh, well, I didn't blow you away then, did I? No.
In fact, that damn sweaty Big E cost me a chance at a draw.
Then he needs to mop his brow and move forward, right?
He's going to have to do something about that. It's really just kind of gross.
All righty. Where are we going today?
You know what? I'm going to ask you here about the Styles Clash. I know you've been doing a lot of moving about in the last over the course of the holiday season between Cincinnati and North Carolina and different spots in the great state of North Carolina. So perhaps you are not well-versed with exactly what's been going on regarding this controversy with the Styles Clash finishing maneuver, of course, popularized by AJ Styles. AJ was on Wrestling Observer Radio this week with Brian and Dave, and I thought it was kind of funny because they had a great 45-minute conversation about a number of subjects, never asked him about the Styles Clash, and it was actually AJ himself who called Brian back a few minutes later and said, "I can't believe you didn't ask me about the Styles Clash." And Brian said, "Oh my God, wait, let me get Dave back on the phone." And they had another discussion that was not actually heard on the air, but described by Dave. And you can get the bits and pieces that were discussed off the air between AJ, Brian, and Dave in this week's issue of The Observer, which is up on the front page now. However, to rewind before we get to AJ's comments on that, basically, Styles Clash finishing maneuver does call for, as one wrestler pointed out, and I will get to his comments in just a moment, for the person taking the move to do something that is kind of counterintuitive to all your training as a wrestler, which is, you know, you're taught to basically tuck your chin. The Styles Clash, if you tuck your chin, you're going to have big trouble. And so this year, we've had three different people, at least by my count, injured in taking the Styles Clash. One was Roderick Strong in a Ring of Honor match, and I believe he suffered a sprain. But the other two guys, Lionheart, a wrestler in the United Kingdom, and Yoshitatsu, who recently left WWE and returned to New Japan, both suffered broken necks this year by tucking their chins in taking the Styles Clash. And this has led to a lot of folks wondering whether or not AJ should just put that move up on the shelf. Not the least of which is Lionheart, Les, who went to Facebook to make a public sort of open letter address to AJ. And among other things, while Lionheart said, "Listen, the truth is," and I'm quoting now, "the move is not directly dangerous. It's a simple move in principle. Arms and legs locked, you fall backward, guy looks up, it's easy. The Styles Clash on paper is a fairly safe and basic process. What is dangerous is the instinctual reaction of your opponent, the wrestler taking the move, who, like any wrestler taking any move, their safety and their welfare is the priority." Of course, he's talking about what I just mentioned, the fact that as a wrestler you are kind of trained to tuck your head. And he goes on to say, with several performers injured taking the Styles Clash this year, two of them now with broken necks. Again, I'm quoting, "The question I want to put to you honestly is, what does it take? What will it take for you to stop using this move, at the very least on the independent level, with people not necessarily exposed to the experience of working with you and taking the move semi-regularly? How honestly will you feel the day you receive the news that the man you just wrestled has a broken neck and will never walk again?" Now, AJ talked to Brian and Dave, as I mentioned, and it's in the Observer this week. And basically what AJ says is that he feels terrible about the folks who've gotten hurt this year. But he was not happy with Lionheart taking his criticisms to Facebook, saying he would have appreciated it more had Lionheart contacted him personally as opposed to putting it out there for the world to see. He said that he personally, AJ is, would like to get his calf slicer, the calf killer finish that he used at the end of his run in TNA, over more as a finisher, but that in Japan, the booker who calls who beats who with what wants him to use the Styles Clash. So he's simply at this point doing what he's told to do by the booker, and that he does not believe the move is, basically he stood his ground about using the Styles Clash.
All right. Well, you know, to start with, over the last 20 years, I guess, I have seen moves, not necessarily finishers, but moves, that I realize that most of my peers if you had approached him, this is what I'm going to do to you tonight, they'd have said, no, you're not. Because, you know, it was dangerous, it was uncomfortable, it was, and I see their point about, you know, the instinctive tuck in your chin. It is, you know, that's the first thing you teach. For those who don't know, down at the Performance Center, WWE has taken the stance of teaching the back bump. And the crazy thing is, the guys that can, well, the exception of the Young Bucks, who say the back bump is more dangerous than whatever, than hit in the head with a chair. But then, of course, they're experts in technical wrestling. They got the headgear, you know, to help prevent concussions or guys banging the back of their head. So, you know, and I think today I haven't taken a bump in a few years now. But if I'm going to, the first thing I'm going to, you know, or if I walk out the door and somebody pushes me down, instinctively I'm going to tuck my chin. Because I've lived that for so many years. And so, you know, there's a point to be made there. Here's the other thing. The kid in England mentions on the independent level, you know, so many guys, I'm getting to work with, it's not just necessarily AJ, but, you know, any of the guys I've seen on television, he's come, they no longer under contract to that company, and it could be Colt, it could be Nigel, it could be whoever, you know. But I can't tell this guy I don't do that, or I can't tell this guy I can't do that, or, because I got to be cool because they're big stars. Wrong. I don't care if you've been in the business 15 minutes or 15 years. If somebody comes to you with a move or a finish, doesn't have to be a finish or a series of moves, and says, I'd like to do this, and you personally, this is not about what your buddies think, it's not about what the locker room thinks, it's not about what anybody thinks. If you personally are not comfortable with that, then you need to say, I don't feel comfortable taking that. Can we do something else? You know, it's that simple. You know, as far as the booker in Japan, you know, if AJ is trying to get away from it, I think he's a big enough star he can say that. You know, I don't think they're going to fire him or send him back to the States. Because he said, I'd rather get this particular move over than the Styles Clash. I have, you know, but that is a move that I've seen. I keep wondering when somebody's going to get hurt. The only surprise to me is it hasn't been sooner. And maybe there's been a couple instances that we don't know about. I don't know. But like I say, it's, you know, and I think AJ is a hell of an athlete. He's always been a gentleman. The last WWE tryout camp, that week-long tryout camp that we did in Cincinnati while I was still under contract to come to AJ, was one of the guys, and the story goes that he was offered a deal and it wasn't enough money for him to support his family, and he decided to turn WWE down and then ultimately ended up with TNA. I'm not picking on AJ. He's a gentleman as far as I'm concerned. He's a good athlete. He's a heck of a performer. It's just, you know, walk away from it. But like I say, if you are the recipient of this, or it's not just the Styles Clash, there's so many goofy moves, Vic, that I see that I think, Jesus, people, this is not... If you know how to tell a story, if you are a craftsman of the art of professional wrestling, then big, stupid, crazy bumps are not necessary. You can draw your audience, draw your viewers, draw your fans in the building in with your performance without risking. Well, I shouldn't say that. We're all, you know, a lot of these bumps these guys take, I would have never, but, you know, we all put our life on the line, our health, when we go in the ring, you know? You can be paralyzed, you can be injured for life, you can be put, you know, in a bad situation, you know, just taking a body slam if you take it wrong. And mistakes are made, human beings make mistakes. So, to me, it comes down to, if you're putting me over, I got to respect that. And if you say, I'm not comfortable taking this, then I also need to respect that. And if I only have one, and AJ doesn't, just, we're not talking about AJ necessarily now, but if that's the only move you've got, then maybe we shouldn't be working, maybe you shouldn't be the guy going over. I mentioned to you before we started recording today, I remember when I say a shoot interview, it was, I was with Luthez at a radio interview years and years ago, and they asked him, how do you beat your opponent? And Lou said, looked at the guy kind of quizzically, and the guy, you know, what's your big move or your hold? And Lou said, I've got more than one. He said, you show me a wrestler with one move or one hold, I'm sure a wrestler I can beat every day. So, you know, that's the versatility is part of our or should be part of our business, and many times it's not. So, you know, it's up to the guy to, if you're not comfortable taking something, don't offer to take it. Please. A quick story, and it ended up, I tease the guy about it when I see him now. Of course I haven't seen him in a while. Curtis Smith, Rocky Smith's younger brother, got into business and worked under a mask. I don't remember what name, but he and I were working. It was a spot show somewhere. I had never worked with Curtis before in my life, and we were going to put in three falls, and he was going to get me over. So anyway, where I was going to drop the fall, I suggested, and the reason I'm doing this suggestion, because I was the veteran in the match, and we happened to be in the same room, locker room. It was set up that way. And I said, okay, we'll do this, give me a backdrop, blah, 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 blah. Now, in a backdrop, and here again, I'm more in control of the thing, but when I get ready to go, or when somebody gets ready to go up for me, you know, the guy underneath, the guy giving the backdrop should be helping that guy. I mean, I'm going to put my hands on your thighs if we set up properly, and I'm going to help you elevate so you can get up and get enough air that you can get turned and come down, you know, in a good position to break your fall. So anyway, we, of course, okay, and we go out, and I push off, and I'm getting no help. And I'm looking straight down at that mat, and I'm able, thank goodness, to get enough twitch in my old butt to get over and get a flat bump in. But he did not help me, and I'm expecting help to get more air, and almost came down on my head. When we got back to the dressing room, it goes back, you know, then in some places you went back to the dressing room between falls. I said, Jesus, Curtis, you didn't give me any help on that backdrop at all. What do you mean? I said, well, you didn't help. Well, I've never given one. And I said, before we go back out for this next fall, is there anything that we've talked about that you haven't done? Because tell me now, you know. But see, there again, he was nervous because he was working with somebody who had been around, who had been on top, and he hadn't. So if I guess anything I might have said at that point, you know, even if it sounded ridiculous, yeah, okay. He wasn't going to disagree. But I mean, here again, you know, I tease him about that up to this day. No harm was done, but it could have been. And God knows a backdrop is not nearly as dangerous as some of the stuff I see. So, you know, I think if I honestly, and again, I cannot speak for AJ. And again, please let me say that I look at him as a friend. And he's a gentleman, and I respect him as an athlete and as a performer. You know, maybe if this had gone three strikes with me, it might be out. Maybe this is something I'm going to walk away from, you know, and decide that I don't want to risk anybody, you know, because I know when Darren Drozdoff, when he was disabled, I know D'Lo was beside himself. I mean, he was just, you know, he was taking detours off the road to go sit with Darren in the hospital. And Drozdoff had told him, he said, it's not your fault, it was an accident. And, I mean, D'Lo was beating himself up, and I'm sure AJ doesn't want to hurt these guys. And I can't speak for him or anybody else, but I think for me, if I had two broken necks and a sprained neck, you know, even if I've been doing this for years, I think it's time I'm going to stop doing it. You know, and I, again, that's just my opinion. But, you know, I will say again, if you are a wrestler and you are somebody offers to ask you to you know, interjects a spot or a move or, a finish that you are not comfortable with, you need to say so because your health is at risk. And part of coming, you know, as Bret Hart says, I don't care how many stars you give a match. If we don't come out, if somebody comes out of the ring and somebody's hurt, then it's not a good match.
Quick question for you about those who never learn, at least in my opinion. Also in the Observer this week, word on the street that TNA offered Alberto Del Rio, although now known as Alberto El Patron, something in the area of $400,000 to come in, and Alberto said no, because apparently, allegedly, of course this is just the rumor mill, TNA was looking for a little exclusivity, and Del Rio said exclusivity is going to cost you more than $400,000. And there's apparently still some, it appears, back and forth between both sides. Meanwhile, Del Rio's taken some dates in ROH. Anyone who's a big hardcore wrestling fan and is on this site regularly knows that he's taken, I believe it's 4 dates this month, and a couple of opponents have already been announced for him in Ring of Honor, ACH, Christopher Daniels, and a couple of more still to be announced.
I'm interested but in less, him with Daniels. I really don't care to see him in ACH, quite frankly. But anyway, go ahead.
You know what? Can I tell you honestly? I'm actually most intrigued by that match because I expect Alberto to ground him.
Well,
at least at some
yeah, okay. Because I was about to say, the only match, and of course you got to realize I'm more about technicalities than I am stupid spots. The best
sure.
match I've ever seen the kid have was when Carl Anderson grounded him.
Right. And so, I mean, that was my thought really was that this is a match that this kid hopefully will get a lot out of from being in and being in there with a guy like Del Rio.
Yeah.
But the idea that TNA has offered this guy $400,000 to come in, and anyone who's listened to this show over the last few months knows how much and how highly we think of Alberto Del Rio, given what's gone down with him in WWE and, you know, the way he was presented and how he's presented himself since leaving WWE.
Right.
But I look at this offer, if it's true, Les, and I just me being dumb because I just keep expecting Dixie Carter to know better. But you've just downgraded television networks, television partners, and television contracts. You've been hemorrhaging people left and right over the last 6 months, trying to downsize this company and cut costs any place you can. You are no longer doing house shows, or at least at the moment there is no touring arm of this company. And you've got $400,000 to spend on Alberto Del Rio?
Yeah, you know, yeah, you're right. It doesn't make a lot of sense. Except, I don't know. If you're looking for a logical explanation for me, I probably don't have one. But you're right. It doesn't make a lot of sense. It's, you know, it seems counterproductive. And obviously when that kind of money, especially when it's public, you know, public knowledge, then there's going to be boys in your camp, in your locker room, that's going to say, wait a minute. You know, I just took a cut in pay. We're on a network that's not as strong, et cetera, et cetera. And all the points you made at the beginning of this particular part of the show. And so, I don't know. You know, if we're looking to think, talking about Dixie Carter as someone that does logical things in professional wrestling, then we're not talking about Dixie Carter. Or at least there's nothing to talk about. You know, I think Jerry Jarrett, when he said the first day she came into the company to take over a national wrestling company and said, I've never seen a wrestling match in my life. You know, she has been, you know, and again, I don't know this to be a fact. I've never worked for that company, you know, but we talk about Vince's yes people or yes men, yes persons, I guess is politically correct. Dixie has her share too, obviously, because she thinks she's an on-air talent. She's not. And she needs to listen to people that make, you know, that actually understand the business. And, you know, but that's strange to me. You know, you find it, the Jerry Joneses, Dan Snyders in football, you'll find these multi-million dollar owners of sports franchises that all of a sudden they think, because I own this, I obviously know how to run it. Wrong, you know. But I see that in our business, too, you know, at so many levels. Well, you know, I've got some money. I'm a wrestling fan. I'm going to start a promotion, and I'm going to call the shots. You might as well just go out on the street corner and hand out your money for the most part, because, you're wrong to begin with. So it's, you know, I don't see her being any different, Vic. I honestly don't. I think Del Rio would have been a benefit to them, and I see his point as well. If that's your if that's your opening offer, and you want exclusive, then you're going to have to up the ante. Years ago, and I won't mention any names. I was doing television for a couple different small promotions, and all of a sudden, I had one of these guys say, "Well, I want you exclusive." I said, okay, then here's what that's going to take, because to be exclusive, I'm going to sit home and wait for your phone call. And to do that, I still got to pay my bills. And so, I see his point, And obviously with money in this business, in the 54 plus years I've been in it, it's always been, negotiations. You tell me you'll give me so much a match, I'll tell you I need more than that. And we'll finally hit a middle ground somewhere. I'm going to start high. You're going to start low. We're going to find a place. So, I don't think she understands that. I'm not sure who in that company at this point does. But Del Rio would have. And here's another thing I thought too when I first heard, they made him an offer. Let's go back over how many years has that damn company been in business? 11, 12, I don't know. But since, since Panda's taken the reins more or less, Kurt Angle's jumped ship, and has he spiked their ratings, has he spiked their attendance in the house shows? Christian, Mick Foley, Hulk Hogan, has any of this done? Has this changed their business? And I think somebody at this point in that company needs to see this and say, "Hey." And this is what I've said when I ask about that company. I think they are right exactly where they're going to be if they're in business another 10 years. I don't see an improvement in their audience. Well, in fact, with a weaker network, even the fans that can't live without TNA may have to, some of them, because it's not on their cable system or whatever. But the point is, I think the company is right where they're at. And I think they need to sit down and figure their budget with that in mind. We've hit our ceiling. This is the most we're going to draw. And like you say, are they going to do house shows? Are they going to just be a television company? That hasn't been determined, has it?
I don't think it's been finalized.
Or at least not publicly. I mean, they may know Correct. Exactly what they're going to do, but you and I don't have a clue. So, I think they need to, to take that in mind. And, I'm happy for Del Rio. The guy has a good bargaining chip, obviously, whether it's Ring of Honor, AAA, TNA, or whoever it is. So, WWE, treating him as they did, left him in a good position.
I will say this for Del Rio. You get to turn down $400,000 and not bat an eye. Life does not suck.
Really, yeah. it ain't all bad, is it?
It can be.
Offer me $400,000 and see how quick I don't turn it down. In fact, I'll jump on the next plane to your part of the country to get the damn thing signed before you change your mind.
So if you've ever wanted to see Les Thatcher throw 12 super kicks and do moonsaults, just offer him $400,000.
Wow, I'm not sure. Talk about injuring yourself at my age. Maybe the super kicks, but, I only one's necessary if you actually know how to work And if I mean that as a slap to anybody, I do.
All righty. And it's just about question time here at Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. But before we get to the questions, Les, I do want to say thank you to all the folks who are listening to us, possibly for the first time, as a freeloader. This is, in fact, a free show this week. And that's part of the reason we've made this available to you is that we're hoping that you'll sign on just in time for the Christmas holidays. A mere bag of shells, as they say, about $10.99 a month to get not only this fine program, but this is one of 12 to 15 different radio shows available this week. As a matter of fact, I believe Brian Alvarez and Dave Meltzer were talking the other day on Wrestling Observer Radio, and this has been an extraordinarily busy week or 10 days or so, and I believe Brian and Dave by themselves had done something like 14 shows in the last 7 or 8 days.
Oh, wow.
So it's a lot of content. There's a ton of archives. As a matter of fact, over 6,000 hours of audio from these different podcasts that will be available to you. And that's actually more content than the WWE Network currently offers for their $9.99. And well, it's true. And you also get access to the archives and, of course, the current Wrestling Observer newsletters and Figure Four Weekly newsletters as well. So it's definitely a great investment and maybe a fun gift for the wrestling fan in your family if you're checking this out. And maybe you guys can do some things with that as far as the subscription is concerned. And once you're a regular member, you can always send us some questions that we'll ask and answer here at Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. And there's a couple of ways to do that. One, you can head on over to the message board here at f4wonline.com or wrestlingobserver.com. When you get there, just find the Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly thread in the radio show section of the board and send us your question. We'll ask it in the following week. You can also tweet it at us. And now that Les Thatcher is on Twitter, you can send him your questions there.
Oh, my God.
At Les Thatcher on Twitter, or you can send them to me at VS1067. Or if you're my friend on Facebook, you can just type in Victor Sosa, shoot me a question. And I usually put the word out for questions, too, on Wednesday or Thursday for our recording, which normally takes place on Friday mornings here on the East Coast. So with all that out of the way, Les, time to ask the question.
I wanted to say Greg told me when he said, I don't be offended, I've signed you up for Twitter. I said, no, I'm not offended. He said, now on your, I said, I'm smart enough to have a smartphone, so don't worry about that. It's not going to be on my, anyway, don't start bombarding me on Twitter. I don't even know how to get on there yet, so.
First question.
One thing at a time. Yes, go ahead.
Yes. Seems pretty clear that Vince McMahon likes to beat a wrestler down. You know, stuff like having them lose in their hometown or lose in their debut like Charlotte did. Poor Charlotte did a couple of weeks ago. To send some sort of message that he is in control. Did guys do that back when Les was working with the territories, or is this more of a Vince thing?
It's more of a WWE thing. I don't know that it's actually – I guess maybe it is Vince. You know – I can't say that I ever knew for a fact that was done back in, you know, during the time that I was in ring. And if it was kept very quiet and it was not common knowledge even within the industry. However, you know, a lot of times a way a guy was used, you know, was sometimes due to the way he reacted to what he was asked to do. You know, now as a baby face. You know, losing had to be a part of your what you did as a babyface because that's how you got sympathy. You know, or selling for the heel was how you got. I mean, not that you lost, had to lose every night necessarily, but that's how you got heat. That's how the heel got heat. That's why you had a return match and that sort of thing. And I've seen guys that reacted, you know, very badly to being asked to look at the lights. And you know, I tell kids today, they're going to screw with your head, you know, and just if something is going to bother you, don't let them see it bother you. You know, do what you're asked to do. Do it the best of your ability. And then go home, beat your head against a garage wall or whatever, you know, to get rid of your frustration. I don't know why they do that, and I honestly find it silly. You know, okay, well, we've been working with this guy for a year, and you know, now we're going to bring him up and let him look at the lights every night. But if you have, you know, that's the thing, too. Back in the day, if you brought a guy into a territory, you kind of knew what you were going to do with him before there were times you changed your mind, but for the most part, when, you know, a guy calls your office and says, hey, I'd like to come in and work, you kind of know already this guy is preliminary guy, he's a mid-card guy, he's a top guy. Here's what we need. Here's what we can do for you. You know, you make arrangements and you bring the guy in, so you kind of know what you're going to do with him anyway. You know, and the silly thing to me, if they're bringing somebody up and they have plans to push this guy, or if they're signing him from someplace else, it doesn't necessarily have to come out of the performance. Well, they run everybody. I think they'd run God through the performance center, you know, if they signed him. You know, if you know your plan of pushing him, the fact that you're going to make him look at the lights X number of days or nights or shows or whatever makes absolutely no sense to me whatsoever. And do you have to prove to me that you're in control? Hell, if I'm in the business, I know you're in control. You know, financially, you are the only game in town. I mean, you know, we can say ROH is number two, TNA is number two, Charlie Chan is number two, ABC is number two, whatever. But number two is so far behind number one in terms of if there's a race, that there is no race. So, yes, I know you're in charge. I know you're the boss. So, you know, but there's a lot of things that go on like that, Vic, that I see that I think, and of course I've never been a billionaire, a multimillionaire, and I've never owned a major company that was publicly held, so I can only speculate. But I think, God, you know, if I have that kind of money in my bank account and I have that, and I own that kind of business, paranoia is the last thing I'm going to have. You know, it's not like, this is like the Monday Night Wars where WCW is breathing down your neck or they're actually ahead of you in the ratings. So I think the fact that I'm going to make you sign a piece of paper that Vic Sosa is the name that we own and when you leave here you can't use it anymore, or that sort of, I don't even see the value. Or you can't work any place in the world for a year because why? Here's my point. You know, you leave my company. And I've got Vic Sosa T-shirts. You know, I'm going to sell them, and you still get your, you know, because I have them. And if you're out wrestling for somebody else, whether you're looking at the lights or whether you're getting your hand raised, the point is, I still have T-shirts to sell. And the point is, it's the fact that you went to TNA. Has this made a dent in my audience? Has this cost me a dollar? No. Well, then why the hell am I worried about it? That's, and again, like I say, I've never been a billionaire, a multimillionaire, never owned a publicly held corporation. So, you know, I can only speculate. But that's my stance. And to get back on track where we started with this thing is, no, I find it silly. I don't think it's necessary. I mean, if you bring a guy in or a girl and you know that they are going to basically be preliminary people and pretty much do jobs most of the time, I might even get their hand raised a couple times before I start them doing that, just to establish that they actually can, you know, win a match once in a while.
Question for you, kind of somewhat related to that, because of something you touched upon during your time in the territories. Basically, as you pointed out, it was kind of necessary and almost beneficial as a babyface to lose on occasion just to build that heat and that sympathy in a program and things of that nature. But did you find, whether it was for you or for maybe some other guys in the locker room that you knew, or just programs that you watched because you were happened to be in the territory at the time, where almost, you know, being agreeable or maybe too agreeable was actually to your detriment as opposed to your benefit?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah, that would be true. That would absolutely be true. Sure, I can look back and think, you know, there were times for me that I thought, you know, I really wasn't a hard guy to deal with in the business. I was just having a good time and making a living, you know, and doing, following my dream and doing what I love to do. So there were times that I probably should have said no when I, you know, when I said yes, or yes when I should have said no, you know, or said yes when I did say no. So, yeah, that's happened. You know, I just thought something, too. When Steamboat was doing the camps with us, with Harley and I, one of the things that Ricky used to throw out to guys, how many matches you think I've had with Ric Flair? And some might say 50, some might say 150, some might say 200. And I legitimately, Ricky would say, I don't really know myself. You know how many times I beat Ric Flair? And of course, well, 50% of the times, you know, and then there were all sorts of, you know, numbers thrown out there. And he'd hold up three fingers. I want my hand raised three times against Ric Flair. Now, that not only says something about being a babyface, it says something about a guy like Steamer that is such a great performer that, and that's part of it too. You know, how many times have you heard me say, Jericho doesn't mind putting the young guys over because Jericho knows how to take care of Jericho too while he's getting this other guy over. And Flair knew how to get over without killing Steamboat, and Steamboat learned how to get Flair over without, you know, seeming like he was an inept piece of slug himself. So, you know, stop and think about that. How many matches have Ric Flair and Ricky Steamboat wrestled, and the fact that Steamboat only got his hand raised three times?
Says something. Says something about the performer.
Yes, it certainly does. So, you know, it's it can be. And again, you know, I just told this to somebody the other day, and I've said it here before, too. Leo Garibaldi, who was one of my mentors and was an amazing babyface in his own right when he wrestled, but was just a tremendously creative genius, as a bunch of guys will tell you that have ever worked for Leo. One of the nicest compliments I ever received in my life is at one point in my career, Leo said, "Hey, kid, you're a hell of a worker." Thank you, Mr. Garibaldi. That's the good news, kid. The bad news is you're going to do a lot of jobs because there's some guys in this business that aren't. So that sometimes dictates what you do as well, you know. There are guys, you know, today that, you know, that's something that for some stupid reason, a lot of times you see people don't pay attention to, you know. There were guys that... Well, I'll give you Tex McKenzie, God rest his soul, was a big, and he'd tell you, the only thing I could, I'm good at is drawing money. And he did great interviews, he had great size, but when he was like in the Carolinas, Nelson Royal was his tag team partner, for a long time there. But part of that was so Nelson could do the selling, Nelson could work most of the match and give Tex the big comeback. He covered the fact that Tex, you know, physically was not a great worker. But he had the look, he had the charisma, he had the promo, and he drew money. But you had to put him with the right people to get that across. You know, now if you know, it's like everybody's saying, who's Sting going to work with? It better be somebody that can carry him. And that's not being disrespectful to Steve Borden. That's just stating a fact. He is not a great technical worker. He is not a worker that can carry somebody. What were the best matches MVP ever had? Benoit, right? You saw him improve every match out with Benoit. And then once he started working with lesser lights, he kind of plateaued. So, you know, it becomes important, the talent, but it, you know, I've lost my place. Where the hell were we? I'm singing the praises of people that I admire. Anyway, you know, it's, you know, the baby face getting his hand raised is not always important. And,
you know, it's kind of like a parallel in life and life coaching. And for those of you who are freeloaders listening for the first time, I will not belabor this, nor do I regularly, but I am also a life coach. And, basically what you're saying in terms of the performance, Les, is kind of like one of the things that I'll say to somebody I'm working with, you know, it's less about the destination and more about the journey.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, it's how the match is done. It's the journey of the match. You know, can you make that mean more than the actual destination if you're the babyface who's putting, you know, who's usually ends up on the losing end?
Yeah, well, you know, we watched the final episode of White Collar last night, which is a show the wife and I have enjoyed, but to see it's over, right? And the star, the first name is Neil, and he was a con artist, and then he went to work as a, you know, with the FBI and helping them flesh out other con artists and thieves and that sort of thing. And in the middle of the show, it appeared that he was dead, right? And this is the final episode, and it just kind of brought you down. But then at the end, they fed you the little deal where they had faked his death, and he's actually living in Europe, and they show him, because he always wore this great little stingy brim, snap brim hat, and you see, you don't see his face, but you see him putting the hat on, snapping the brim down, and walking away from the camera at the final episode, and the FBI agent, who was his handler, has figured it out and realizes that who had become, Neil had become his friend over so many years, and that he was so stricken with grief because he thought he was dead, and then he realized he wasn't. And, you know, so they gave you a great finish. But you're right. It was, the journey was amazing for several years, and then the way they bounced you emotionally up and down in the final episode was brilliant writing.
Les, did anyone form a Les Thatcher fan club when you were a worker? Seems there were a lot of these fan clubs in the 70s for a number of wrestlers.
Yes. A nice lady by the name of Jean Pierce in Cincinnati started a Les Thatcher fan club and ran it for a number of years. Very nice lady. Her and her husband's nice. I've been in their home, and then they had little parties and dinners and so forth, and they did a fan club bulletin, and somewhere in all my boxes of stuff I have at home is you know, like a fan club ribbon and a banner and that sort of thing. So yeah, there was a Les Thatcher. I guess it was, I think a lot of the fan clubs are called international. When I say Les Thatcher International, I'm not bragging or saying that somebody in Bolivia was a member of my fan club, but that was what it was, Les Thatcher International Fan Club.
Les, have you ever taken part in a Christmas-themed wrestling match?
No. That's an easy one. No, I never have. Themed matches, Bad Santa, hot chicks dressed up like elves and that sort of thing, just wasn't the order of the day when I wrestled. There were Christmas shows, Thanksgiving shows, in terms of themes, I don't know, the ring announcer may have put on a Santa Claus hat or something, but, you didn't have matches where a guy dressed up like, I shouldn't say that. I shouldn't say it never happened. I'd say I was never any place that it happened. So no, I've never been involved in anything like that.
So you mean Leo Garibaldi or George Scott never put you in a reindeer on a pole match?
No, never did. They, for some reason, they actually sold wrestling. It was a whole new concept back then.
Can't believe that.
Leo, I'll tell you what, we came up with an idea together for a match that was...
Reindeer on a pole match?
No, no.
Oh.
It was, Jim Wilson, who wrote the book about how he and Jim Barnett had an affair, was supposed to give him the world title if he slept with Jim and that sort of thing. This was in Atlanta during the war. Bobby Duncombe, who had played football with the Cardinals, briefly with the St. Louis Cardinals at the time. Of course, now it's the Arizona Cardinals. And Jim Wilson, who had played for the Falcons, but I forget who else he played. Anyway, it doesn't matter. But we were sitting and talking about it, and he was saying, well, both these guys have been in the NFL. And so we had a football on a pole match. And I...
Really?
I thought I was just being silly. And Leo said, I like it. So anyway, we ended up getting a helmet with the Falcon logo and a helmet with the Cardinals logo. And it was, we put pads, not pants, they were in wrestling boots and stuff, but they put jersey and shoulder pads, and they could block each other and that sort of thing, and whoever got to the pole first won the match. So, but that was a theme that, because I was so shocked that Leo said, let's do that. And I said, really? And he said, yeah. But you know what? Here's the crazy thing too, Vic. When you look back, realize this was 1973. 74. Things like that weren't done every week, and they weren't done three times in the same show. So something like that was unusual enough that it got a lot of attention, and it was meaningful because you didn't do it again the next week or the next match. So, that's the thing I think that young people in this business or young fans don't understand, young wrestlers don't understand, and Lord knows WWE doesn't promote it, so it's hard to understand if that's all the product you watch, or even TNA, or even Ring of Honor much anymore, is, the less you do something, the more important it becomes. I think maybe that's why Christmas only comes once a year. I'm not real sure.
I want the record to now show very clearly that Vince Russo and Les Thatcher have shared booking ideas.
All right. You just wanted to insult me, right, Vic? That was your Christmas present to me, was to be insulted.
Les Thatcher pitches a pole match. I got to say, I never thought I'd hear that.
Well, they, you know, there were things, I mean, there were, again, you know, it was like the scaffold match thing. It wasn't done every day, you know. The scaffold match where Corny hurt himself, or you know, when, so, you know, a lot of, there were, you know, it was like cage matches or, you know, strap matches or anything like that. They weren't done all the time, so they were important. They stood out, and they drew money.
Well, to that end, themed matches and what have you, and perhaps it's not even a theme, but question came in, Les, do you have any quote-unquote guilty pleasure angles, either currently or in the past, stuff that no one would think you'd like or maybe pitched, like a pole match? Or just something that folks wouldn't think that Les would be into in wrestling that you turned out or ended up liking a lot.
Maybe that was my only guilty pleasure in 54 years and plus. I don't know. No, not really. You know, you got to realize that I grew up in an era where the business was treated with respect. I mean, at least internally, was treated with respect. And yes, there were carnies, and yes, there were gimmicks, and yes, there was even organic comedy on occasion. But it was all well thought out. And again, you know, less is more. And when I say less, I mean LESS. You know, the less you do something, the more important it is. And the more you do it, the less important it becomes. And that takes us right to the year 2014 and pretty much where our business is at, because moonsaults are meaningless. People go wee, but they don't draw money. And super kicks are meaningless. And finish, you know, belts and this and that and the other thing. You know, because it has all been done to death. And when I say we need to take a step back in the industry, I don't mean we need to turn the clock back to 1960 or 1970, but I mean we need to sell more about the competitive wrestling between two competitive athletes vying for some check or belt or a reason, you know, just the same reason you and I follow football.
All right, Les, the NXT special has gotten a lot of buzz that took place last week, and question was asked whether or not you've had a chance to catch up and check out that NXT special. And what did you think of the card overall?
You know, I did not get to see it. You commented on it. I've heard a couple other people comment on it. And, you know, the craziest thing is, and the comment is made by several people, you being one, is that when you want to watch NXT, you wonder who actually owns that company, because it's nothing like Raw or SmackDown, nothing like what you see in WWE's other programming. And that's sad, too, because, you know, seemingly they're more about the competitive edge in NXT and more about the wrestling than they are about the pageantry or the gimmicks. And so, you know what, one of these days I am going to get that little thing that plugs into your big screen TV where I can actually, because as you know, I do critique some of the young guys I work with matches and send me links, and I will sit in front of my computer for 10 minutes or something to watch that. But I just can't sit and watch a complete program. And now, somebody will say, well, Les doesn't have an attention span worth a damn either. But that's not true. I sit and watch good entertainment on the big screen for hours, if it's good entertainment. And, you know, and there's some good athletes down there. I know. And I know there's talk of some of the guys being coming up that as good as they are down there, they won't be that good when they come up, because they're going to change the way they present them. Does that make any sense to anybody? So, you know, that's the theme maybe for WWE should be, even if it's not broke, we're going to fix it anyway. you think? I mean, I don't know. Whatever.
What? You know, it's not a legit gimmick anymore, Les, if 26 writers don't get a crack at it.
Well, see, there you go. And all those writers that have taken one bump in their life, hold your hand up. Well, I didn't see any hands go up. It's, you know, I talked to an independent promoter the other day, and this is just a nice gentleman. But he honestly doesn't, you know, he wasn't dialed in. He didn't grow up in the wrestling business. He's just trying to get in the wrestling business, basically. He's a fan. And when he said, I have a professional writer who wrote a book titled blah, 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 and I had to stop and think how I was going to say this. And finally, I said, if let me say this to you. I said, if someone gave me complete, utter control of WWE tomorrow, probably one of the first things I would do in terms of changing would be to fire every writer they had. And he said, really? And I said, yes. You know, this product, and that's when I don't think, you know, and I know I've got detractors, and somebody's going to go on the board and listen to this and say, well, I've watched a billion tapes. What do you mean? I don't know what I'm talking about. You know, I watch a lot of movies, and nobody's ever asked me to produce one or direct one. You know, yet I think I understand what a good movie is. But, you know, this business is unique unto itself. And I've said this before, too. If Ernest Hemingway were brought back from the grave and said, hey, Ernest is going to write for you, okay. But you know what? I'm going to have some good wrestling people redline, you know, get the red marker out and teach him the boundaries of professional wrestling, because it's got nothing to do with a great novelist. It's got nothing to do, you know. And you think if all these writers are so good, then why doesn't WWE look like Law and Order or The Stalker or Justified? Or and did you see the final episode of Anarchy, by the way?
I did not.
Man, they set you up and they built. It was almost 2 hours. Jax Teller, who was the main character in this whole series, and again, this is the final episode of the whole show. This show is not coming back. And they took you. You knew he was setting himself up for something. You know, he went to his father's grave and did such and such. He went to his wife's grave and did such, you know. And he went to the guys in the motorcycle club. And you knew he was either planning on turn himself in and go to jail or something. And he ends up, well, I won't even tell you, but if you get a chance to watch it, watch it. But they hold you for that entire time of this final episode till they give you the finish. You know that something dramatic is going to happen, but you don't know what. That's what's lacking in our business today.
Question from the lovely Alice Radley, who just happened to chime in this week, Les. Of course, you know, our talking about her earlier had nothing to do with this question whatsoever. Lately on the show she does with Jim Cornette, which is, by the way, available at the MLW radio website, they've been talking a lot about UFC and MMA in general, how it's become today's true pro wrestling. This is because of a lot of its seriousness, strong rivalries, great promos. Obviously, Alice says the work is not predetermined, but that's pretty much irrelevant. Do you and Les see the same parallels? You first, sir.
I could simplify to say yes. In fact, Jim, I know Jim has been saying that for a number of years, and I have echoed his sentiments, or a lot of the people in our business sentiments, about that. Yes, absolutely. And, you know, and one of the things, Alice, that I tell people as well in this business, in this industry, and of course, obviously they're not listening, is, you know, 50 years ago, 40 years ago, we could have done some of the stupid silliness that you see in professional wrestling today and probably got away with it easier than they can today, for that very reason, because there was no UFC then. There was nothing to compare us with. And that is another reason that I think the professional wrestling industry, or the sports entertainment industry, or whatever the hell you want to call it, needs to take a look at that, seriously take a look at it, and dummy themselves back a little bit and make it more a competitive thing and make it more about, you know, issues and try to emotionally draw the fans into the product, opposed to doing bad comedy about somebody's sweat glands or, stupid things like that. So, yes, I totally agree with Jim. Well, I agree with Jim on a lot of things. To me, I've known Jimmy Cornette since he was a fan. We first met at a fan club convention. But as a mind in this business, I respect him. Aside from the fact he is a personal friend and has been a buddy of mine for a long time. UFC. Well, yeah, I'll tell you a quick, and I may have said this on this show a few times before, at a Cauliflower Alley convention a number of years ago, and don't ask me what year it was because I don't remember, probably 2004 or 5, Cowboy Scott Casey, who was my tag team partner in another life, and his wife invited us, myself and my house, Jack and Jan Briscoe, and Terry and Vicky Funk to their house for a cookout. And we're sitting on the patio enjoying a adult beverage. And Terry said to Jack and Scotty and I, TNA is not any problem for Vince McMahon. Well, he didn't say problem. He said, it's not competition. You know what competition for Vince McMahon is? And knowing Terry, you know, weren't sure if he was just, you know, trying to be funny or whether he was serious, because honest to God, Terry Funk is a visionary. He really is. I've seen that in him over the years several times. And we said, what? He said, UFC is the actual competition to Vince McMahon or to professional wrestling. And I agree. I agreed then, and it becomes more apparent every day, I think. Can Alice get us some money for that? I don't know.
Well, I'm certainly not going to disagree with the opinions of Les Thatcher, Terry Funk, or Jim Cornette. So I'm going to say yes, only because I don't want to get stretched. But also because there's maybe something, and this was actually mentioned on one of the radio shows on our site this week. I wish I could remember which one so I could give them credit. But I know that it was said, and I know that I've actually seen it for myself, which is why I'm going to bring it up. If you're wondering why it does resemble pro wrestling in so many of the great ways pro wrestling was great years ago, all you have to do is actually go through the Observer archives. Back in the day when Dave was printing letters from subscribers, I have more than once seen in back issues of the Observer letters from Joe Silva, who, from for lack of a better term, I don't know what his actual technical term is in UFC, but he's the booker. And this guy was writing Dave letters fairly regularly about what was going on in the world of pro wrestling. So that's a guy who has watched many years, understood, knows what makes, interesting rivalries and what have you, and he's taken the things that he learned and watched growing up watching pro wrestling and brought it to UFC.
Yeah. Well, you know, and one of the things, too, is that Rip Rogers makes this comment all the time. You know, you can have the greatest costume in the world. You can have the greatest music in the world. You can have greatest gimmick in the world and whatever else. The minute the bell rings, if you can't deliver between the bells, all the other is just crap. And I think, when you see the house show drop off, when you see the pay-per-views drop off, when you see television ratings drop off, it's hard to discount that. It's hard to discount that.
Hate to ask this last question and basically put a lump of coal in your stocking, Les, but this is, as luck would have it, today's last question. Can anything short of Daniel Snyder selling the Washington Redskins be done to actually save this team? As a fan, I don't think a classy owner like Jack Kent Cooke could fathom what has happened to this once historic and respected franchise since his passing. Merry Christmas to you, Les.
Thank you very much, and Merry Christmas to you, too. You know what? I was watching, pardon the interruption, yesterday, and they had Steve Young on. And one of the questions to Steve was, is the coaching the problem with RG3, or is it RG3? And he said, it's not the coaches. RG3 has to understand the nuances of pocket passing. And, you know, Jay Gruden is, you know, he was the offensive coordinator for my hometown, the Cincinnati Bengals. This whole, you know, it's, well, you know, Dallas, even with Jerry Jones in the driver's seat, has finally put together a good team, and I think that's part of it. I think Daniel Snyder needs to allow his football people to pick, make the picks, and is I don't see him selling the team, and I, you know, and for those who don't, I've been a Skins fan since Lombardi jumped ship from the Packers and started coaching there, whatever year that was. I have no earthly idea. And I talk about a disgruntled fan. I understand the Cubs, the people that are fans of the Chicago Cubs. I said to somebody the other day, you know, I've been a Boston Celtics fan since I became a fan of professional basketball. Went to their games when I was in Boston in 60 and 61. Redskins fan. Thank God my Dodgers at least got to the to a point in the playoffs. But if I lived and died by the Redskins and the Celtics, I'd probably cut my wrist tomorrow. I think it's just a matter of, you know, Snyder's not going to sell the team. It's a matter of him understanding that he's got to let football people make the football calls. Just like I think wrestling people have to make the wrestling calls.
All right, I got to ask you one question before we actually wrap this thing up about the Redskins and Jay Gruden specifically. I don't know if you saw these comments this week, but did you see his latest take on RG3 this week when he announced that he was going to be the starting quarterback this Sunday?
No, I did not.
He, under the guise of just talking about Griffin quarterbacking this week, absolutely eviscerated him once again about the things he's looking for, what he wants to see, what Robert's not giving him, why he didn't help him out by calling a timeout a couple weeks ago when he had put him in at the end of a game and was not silly and all this stuff. And, I mean, he basically, on one hand, if you're a reporter, you probably love this because he's actually telling you what he really thinks as opposed to giving you, quote-unquote, coach speak. But in his criticisms, and that's what they are, I don't care what he says they are, of what Robert Griffin does and does not understand at this point, according to Jay Gruden, I mean, to me, you are better served in giving the media coach speak than talking to, than ripping this kid apart the way you have over the course of the year. Because to me, you're doing just as much damage to his confidence by what you're saying as what his performance has belied on the field. I mean, like, if he's feeling bad about the way he's playing, he's not getting any help from you in front of, you know, millions of people in the television cameras when you're just throwing him under the bus each and every week. In my opinion, I think that's what Jay Gruden is doing. And you can speculate, and people have, whether or not there's some sort of issue in the personal relationship between the two of them, whether or not Jay Gruden actually likes RG3, dislikes him, is sick of him, yada, yada, yada. I don't know. All I'm saying is, if I'm another player in that locker room, even if on one hand I don't like Robert Griffin and I'm kind of chuckling at him getting torn apart on a weekly basis by Jay Gruden in public, I'm also in no hurry to run through a wall for a guy who has no hesitation in ripping his players publicly either.
Well, you know, I think that, you know, of course, I don't know RG3 and I don't know Gruden. I mean, when I say I don't know, I know who they are. You know, I think as a trainer, and let me say this, I make mistakes every day of my life, and I've made mistakes with guys I've trained. I think there's some guys you need to push their buttons. I was a kid, as whether it was basketball, football, wrestling, baseball, whatever it was, you know, it was times if I got my ass chewed, whether it was publicly or in front. I mean, well, of course, it would never press conferences. But, you know, if I got laid low by my coach or trainer or boss or promoter or whatever, to me, I didn't sulk. It didn't help. I mean, at that particular time, I felt really bad. But I always looked at that as, okay, You're calling me out. You're challenging me to up my game. So screw you. I'm going to show you, you know? And I realize some guys need to be pampered. I don't know. With that in mind, I'm not sure whether Gruden is on the right approach or not. And if RG3 is Dan Snyder's, teacher's pet sort of thing, that's not a good idea either. It's like, well, you've got to be good to him because I signed him because I'm paying him this kind of money. You know, that shouldn't be the point. But you know, every coach is different, every player is different, every wrestler and every promoter and every booker is different. So it just depends. I don't really know, Vic. You know, it's probably not a good idea to, you know, but to lay him low in front of the team, I don't know that that would be a bad idea. I didn't hear Gruden. I'm sure Gruden's frustrated. You know, he's given his first head coaching job and they're what, 3-11 or some craziness. I don't even know at this point. And I mean, they've got to be, I mean, the season's over for them anyway, you know. I just hope that they can salvage something out of this. And I think this, I think RG3 is, I don't know if he's gun-shy, a bit hesitant. But, you know, when Steve Young says he needs to listen to, Steve Young said on Pardon the Interruption yesterday, in the office, he's got 6 months to spend 4 hours a day with Jay Gruden watching tapes of pocket passers. And he needs to swallow his ego and go to school and understand that as talented as he is in some categories, he is not talented there, and he needs to be. And if Steve Young says it, by gosh, I can go to the bank. I feel maybe I can go to the bank with it because aside from being a great player himself, Young, I think, is a pretty level-headed guy and says things the way he sees them.
So we are now just, what, a week out from Christmas? And we're getting closer and closer to an exciting new project in your hometown come the first of the year.
Yeah, and a couple of things. You know, before we get there, I want to, you know, you and I are, next week is the holiday and we're not going to get together and I'm going to be in different places and hopefully you're going to be having a good time as well. And, you know, I want to kind of look back and say I appreciate everybody that listens to our show, whether they agree or disagree. You know, it's really, it's an honor to know that people like, you know, from the San Juan office and Alice who produces Jimmy's show, and that we have people in the industry that actually think that we may have a clue. And I appreciate that. But you know, I want to look back, you know, you mentioned Facebook earlier and we got so much support from my wife's knee operations and everything from the people, the fans and people in the industry on Facebook. You know, and it was a tough grind for her. And of course now she's walking and things are coming along and, you know, she's recovering and everything. So it was kind of a down period for us. Because actually over 8 months period, she had that same knee cut on 4 times and was 3 months, you know, in rehab with no jointer at all. And so I so appreciate, you know, everyone's concern and prayers and thoughts and support for her and for our family in that respect. Looking back over the past year, you know, in January we finished up what I think was an amazing tournament. Race for the Ring was a year-long tournament in L.A. I can tell you that I think it was in the wrong market, but that's neither here nor there. But the locker room, I had an amazing crew of guys that worked on that show. They were, you know, the locker room came together and produced great wrestling matches. If you get the opportunity to buy that entire series of DVDs, and I don't make a penny off of those, you can get those at High Spots or you can go to WrestlingCares.com. Those kids just stepped up and wrestled their asses off for us, and I love them to death, and I was so amazed, you know, it was so much fun working with them. For me, and Nigel was my co-booker, I won't say my assistant, because he was more than that. He and I hit another level of our friendship, of our, you know, he's like family to me, and he, you know, of course, David Jackson gave us the platform at which to do Race for the Ring. It was something different. If you haven't seen it, please check it out. I think if you're a wrestling fan, professional wrestling fan, you'll enjoy it. I had the opportunity to work with some great young athletes when I did the camps this year, and trainers. Danny at Monster Factory, Tony Givens up in Smoky Mountain, NWA Smoky, Woody down in Deep Southern Championship Wrestling. I mentioned Greg Price earlier at at the Charlotte Mid-Atlantic and NWA Fan Fest. The trainers I had the opportunity to work with, the young talent, just, you know, it was, there are people that actually have respect for this industry and want it to be preserved in, you know, in some form, you know, some semblance of what it's been over the years. And of course, working with you has been an amazing time. I mean, you've made this a more professional show than it's ever been, Vic. And for those who don't know or do know, I do a show on another site as well, and Mike Johnson was a blessing there. It's been a hell of a good time for me, and starting next year is going to be kind of a new chapter as well. I do want to say that when I mentioned Greg Pryor, you know, I do want to plug, he's putting it out on Twitter today, but we are doing July 30th through August the 2nd is the Mid-Atlantic Legends Fan Fest in Charlotte, North Carolina. You can go to their nwalegends.com and check out all the information, but he's posted it on Twitter today. We will be doing a four-day training session again, $319, 36 spots open. And coming back from last year where we had a great time and gelled and worked so well together, Dr. Tom Pritchard, myself, Lance Storm, Nigel McGinnis, and we're adding the ever-impressive Rip Rogers from OVW, who is an amazing trainer as well, and obviously the Reed Flair Memorial Scholarship of $2,500 goes to the top trainee for that 4 days. Plus, this $319 gets you into the awards banquet and all the other activities that go on during that period of time. And as you mentioned, starting January the 2nd, I'm going to be doing three sessions a week in Ohio at the CWAI warehouse in Hamilton, Ohio. It's 1930 Fairgrove Avenue. You can email me for more information on that. We've got some guys coming in from out of state that I've worked with in the past. This is not just about guys that are beginners. If you've been in the business 15 minutes or 15 years, I have access to this gym and a ring 7 days a week. If you want to bring three or four guys, come in and train for a couple of days, we'll work it out. You can get a hold of RJ, who is promoter there, 513-498-3622, or you can email me, les@epwt.com or lesthatcher@zoomtown.com. And, of course, I'm still open for weekend training camps and hope to work. And I forgot to mention my buddy Antonio Thomas and up at the Ring Sport Wrestling Gym. And you know, it's just great to know that all these guys have respect for the industry. And it's been a real pleasure working with them. And I want to wish everybody a Merry Christmas.
Been a really fun year for me as well. And really, from a wrestling standpoint, it continues to be really a sincere honor and privilege for me to sit under the learning tree on a weekly basis with you, sir, and share some of that knowledge that you've gained over the course of 54 years, 54 glorious years, as Larry Zbyszko would say.
You realize February will be 55 years ago that I got on a bus in Cincinnati and went to Boston to learn this business.
Who goes to Boston in February?
Idiots like me who want to be professional wrestlers.
Cold up there in February.
It sure is, baby.
But that is quite a journey, and it all started almost 55 years ago now.
Yeah. And, you know, then I was 19 years old, and I was just interested in doing what I wanted to do, and who would have ever thought that it would have lasted this long? I mean, I didn't, that's for sure, but I've been blessed, and I don't know. I won't say I hope I got another 55 years because the struggle's been too damn hard. So, but at least another 55 days or 55 minutes or something anyway.
But you've been blessed, and those who have had the good fortune to cross paths with you and share that knowledge and receive that knowledge that you share so freely have been blessed as well.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that. And, of course, we want to wish our irrepressible Doc Young a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And we're sorry, Doc, that AJ married CM Punk. But
it was a down year for Doc Young, wasn't it?
Yeah, we all have our crosses to bear. What can I say?
That is true. And as Doc is fond of saying, we hope that you have enjoyed this particular edition of Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly, where we worked hard to provide some edutainment for you. A little education and entertainment all mixed up into one, and hopefully you've enjoyed a year's worth, or perhaps are planning on enjoying a year's worth if you're a freeloader listening to this and going to subscribe. And regardless of which, we're grateful that you took the time to spend some time with us today.
I guess we should now, we should thank Dave and Brian for giving us a platform to have this show as well. Otherwise, they're liable to cut us off at the knees.
Absolutely.
And of course, our Christmas checks will be in the mail, Brian.
Yeah, wait, you get a check?
Check mark, I think I meant.
Oh, okay.
Or a turkey or something, right? Or a wreath or a fruitcake.
I thought you'd been cashing my checks all this time. I didn't know.
Well, you know, it's we're like, I'll invite you out on my 40-foot cabin cruiser. Enough of the sarcasm.
Well, you never know what Santa will deliver this week.
Enough
right?
of the sarcasm, Les. Make us all big.
He is the legend, Les Thatcher. My name is Victor Sosa. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. Thank you so much for tuning in and checking out this edition of Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. And depending on when the schedule falls, we could perhaps be back before the new year. But just in case we don't, have a very happy and healthy Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to you.